Okay, good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to thank you for coming to my presentation today. This is part of my master's work at Kansas State University, and it is also a cooperative project with NRCS. So to analyze how humans can be involved or affect the soil forming process, we can study dynamic soil properties. These are properties within the soil that can change with natural and anthropogenic distressors and disturbances. Today, our project is going to focus more on agriculture as an anthropogenic stressor. The qualities that we studied in the soil that are considered dynamic are total carbon, pH, bulk density, and aggregate stability. And the reason why we're studying these is so we can explain and quantify changes in soil function from these anthropogenic stressors. On the flip side of things, we have inherent soil properties. And these are properties that remain relatively stable and are strictly regulated through the five soil-forming factors. So two key inherent soil properties are texture and mineralogy. Taxonomy is then based off of these properties, and so taxonomy is kind of seen as something that doesn't change as much either. So another element we want to look at in this project is to see how or what will happen when these anthropogenic stressors can affect the five soil forming factors. So specifically, we'll be looking to see how 40 years of irrigation will affect inherent soil properties. So to do that, we studied the soil series Keith, which is classified as a fine, silty, mixed, superactive, mesic, aridic, argy-ustal. It is a very dominant soil series in western Kansas, and it even goes north into Nebraska as well. So this is a map of Kansas in the central United States. The boxed off red area is Sheridan County, which our sites are located in. And the blue shaded area is the High Plains Aquifer, which includes Ogallala Aquifer as well. There's a lot of production agriculture in western Kansas, and it would not be possible without irrigation. As you can see from the taxonomy, we're present in an ustic moisture regime, so it's very dry. And irrigation can almost double the amount of precipitation per year, so we can have a drastic effect on the climate of that area through irrigation. Another way that agriculture can kind of add stressors or differences in the soil-forming factors is through organisms. Naturally, this area has mid to short grass prairie species, and most of the area is in irrigated corn, and we also have different management within that, within those production systems as well. We can have conventional till, there's a high amount of strip till, which is a conservation tillage method, and then we also have no-till. Producers are also incorporating cover crops as well. So we have a lot of variation that's going on in this landscape. But otherwise, this landscape is a very flat, stable landscape, a late Wisconsin age loess, and that has been forming for a very long time. So as you could also see from the classification of Keith, that we do have an argillic horizon. Now let's just quick kind of review what the central concept of an argillic horizon is. We must have an increase of clay with depth, and we must have orientation of clay. Both of these concepts really need to be formed through alluviation to classify as an argillic horizon. However, it has been seen in multiple studies that we can have these clay increases and orientation of clay through in situ weathering processes. We can have weathering of mica and feldspar and shrink swell action in the soil that can look like an argillic horizon, but it's not formed through alluviation processes. So what we're wondering now is how do these argillic horizons form in Keith soils, where we have a relatively dry environment naturally, and then what happens when we irrigate these soils? Does that increase alluviation at all? So the objectives of this study were to analyze how agriculture management can affect dynamic soil properties. We also then wanted to understand how long-term irrigation can affect the processes that form these argillic horizons. And finally, examine the classification of Keith and how it is affected by different types of agriculture management. So to do this, like I said, we studied the soil series Keith, which is in Sheridan County in northwestern Kansas. And all of our sites are mapped as Keith. We had four sites that were under strip till, which is, again, a conservation tillage method. 30% of residue is left on the surface, and strips are tilled that prepare a seedbed. And then we also have four sites in no-till, which have been in no-till for a various amount of time. Some producers even incorporate cover crops as well. And if you're not familiar with the landscape of western Kansas, it looks a lot like the picture in the top right-hand corner. So like I said, irrigation is very prevalent in this area. So they use a lot of center pivot irrigation systems. So what you'll have is you'll have a circle that the center pivot reaches that is irrigated, and then you have dry land corners that the center pivot does not reach. So that's kind of under the natural austic moisture regime. And just to put things into perspective, that is the size that's located in that photo is a half of a quarter section. So to analyze how tillage can affect dynamic soil properties, we looked at our strip-till and no-till sites and looked at our irrigated area. So we're just looking at tillage here. And we sampled the AP horizon in 5-centimeter increments and measured our dynamic soil properties based off that. Then to look at the effect of irrigation on argillic horizon formation, this is when we really incorporated these dry land corners. So just at our strip-till sites, because we're looking at the effect of irrigation, we took 3 pedons, kind of at those plus marks in the irrigated portion, and then 3 pedons in the dry land corners. So 6 pedons total per site, 3 of which were irrigated, 3 of which are non-irrigated. We did a full pedon description down to 2 meters. And we measured we collected soil for particle size analysis at each horizon, and then collected thin sections of the subsoil to determine soil micromorphology. So these are just very preliminary results. We have not done any statistical analyses on this yet. But when we measured total carbon, we calculated on a volume basis, as that matches carbon sequestration data. And we measured carbon from the top 5 centimeters. And we're finding a little bit higher in a no-till system versus a strip-till system. And then when we look at aggregate stability, we measured the mean weight diameter of aggregates, and this was taken of the entire AP horizon. And again, we're finding a little bit higher in a no-till system, but just looking at this, you can see there's a lot of variability in a no-till system, so that's something to look into further. For pH and bulk density, we measured each 5-centimeter increment of the AP horizon. And basically what I did here is I averaged all of our findings just so you all could get an idea of what is going on at this site. And so again, when we average all these, we're not seeing much of a difference, strip-till versus no-till, maybe a little bit higher in no-till systems, but not that large of a difference yet. This is what we kind of want to look at to a statistical analysis to look at differences in depth. So now to launch into kind of the taxonomy portion of the project. This was a pedon description of an irrigated pedon, and it classified as Keith in the field. And this is a typical Keith pedon. So we'll have a BT horizon, all the sand, silt, and clay percentages that is lab data. So we have a significant clay increase, we have a higher fine clay to total clay ratio, and we also have descriptions of clay films. So it's going to be classified with an argillic as a Keith soil series. We will then have BK horizons, which have pedogenic carbonate. The CCE is less than 15% in all these soils, so it does not classify as calcic. Then when we look at a non-irrigated pedon, we see roughly the same thing in the field. So again, we have the BT horizons with a significant clay increase, higher fine clay to clay ratios, description of clay films, and we still have that pedogenic carbonate. So when we look at these in the field, roughly they look like the same soil. So again, we need to look further to see how these argillic horizons are forming. And we can do that by looking at thin sections. So if we look at the picture on the left-hand side, I can't get my mouse in here. Okay, so we can see along this void, we're going to have very thin alluvial argillands. And we're determining that these are formed through alluviation because they're associated with a void. So clay is moving down the soil profile through these voids. On the other, we're not really dominantly seeing this in our soils. What we're dominantly seeing is the picture on the right hand. if I can get my mouse back again. Okay, so if we look around these grains, we actually have grain argillans around a lot of our grains. And we're identifying these as a stress feature rather than an alluvial feature. And why we're doing that is because they're not associated with a void. And you can kind of see around some of these grains, they're actually uniform around the grain. So shrink swell action in the soil is actually squashing this clay material evenly around these grains. So that's what we're dominantly seeing in our soils. So again, the question all comes back to, how are these argilla chorizons forming? Why are we having these clay increases? Well, normal alluviation processes are playing a role, and we are classifying some argilla chorizons based off of micromorphology, but they're forming very thin clay films. What we're suspecting that the dominant increase of clay and source of clay in these soils comes from the weathering of mica. And this picture, again, shows it perfectly. So down here we have a mica mineral that's surrounded by a weathering rind that consists of clay. Then coming off of this weathering rind, we do have clay material. And we can actually see it up here as well. This is a very, very weathered mica mineral. And again, we have then clay material around it as well. So then we also do have shrink swell capabilities of the soil that will kind of reorganize that clay and orientate the clay. But overall, to determine if irrigation can enhance alluviation processes or these weathering processes, we really need to do a lot more analysis. And along with more analysis on that, again, this is part of my master's work, so if you can kind of get a timeline as to where I'm at. For the dynamic soil property side of things, we really want to delve deep into the statistics to be able to show these differences among all our different management systems. And then continue analysis on our thin sections to find trends and to distinguish stress from alluvial clay. And ultimately, from these results, determine how humans can affect the soil forming processes. And with that, I would like to thank everyone that's on this screen. This project would not have been possible without their help. Again, this is a cooperative project with NRCS, and especially I'm on the left-hand side, and then the four individuals, Dale Yonker, Tom Conkren, Ryan Still, and Laura Brinknell, are from the NRCS, and this project would not have been possible without them. So with that, I thank you for your attention, and I will take any questions at this time.
A perfectly timed presentation, so we have very good. So one or two questions?
Yeah.
Did you measure coefficient of linear extensibility to support the notion that there was much shrink swell in these soils?
We did not. However, the clay mineralogy or the that are present in the soils are dominated by 2-to-1 minerals, so we do have a lot of shrink swell action. But no, we did not actually go through and measure a linear extensibility.
Could you do that in future analysis?
Yeah.
Trying to remember from your head-on description data you had, the data we showed, was there a difference in the amount of clay films in the two profiles?
Yeah. Yes, you are correct. There definitely was. So I don't know if I can do this, but okay. So if we look at their irrigated paddock, yes, you are correct. We saw the 10% were described, whereas then moving into our non-irrigated, yes, there was a lot less. However, I think it's a little too early to make that assumption, but yeah, and that has been found in research that has been done in this area as well, that irrigation will have more prominent clay films. So.
Right,
yes, that is very true.
Thank you.
Yeah.